You know what they say about King Solomon? Rawr. Salutations, everyone, and welcome back to Zero Credits, the show where we talk about things. I'm Henry.
And I'm John.
And together we're hungover and John.
I think it's hungover and hungover.
You're right.
Okay.
Welcome to Overcast.
That's like weather.
Yeah, but...
it's similar to the weather.
Before the over... in parentheses, there is the word hung, and I just skipped over it because you don't have to read things in parentheses. They're optional.
Is that really true?
No.
Oh, I was going to say, if that's true, then if I ever enter post-grad, I'll just put things in parentheses in my papers. They're like, I hate you, professor. I hate you and your stupid rat tail.
They would still read it, though.
I'd be like, it was optional. It's your fault you read it.
No, I mean it's up. Oh. What I mean by that is, things in parentheses aren't necessary to complete the sentence.
Yeah. I like writing things in parentheses.
I do too. People hate it.
Yep.
I don't know why.
I think it's an important stylistic choice.
I think stylistic choices are important.
I think we agree.
All right.
That's done and dusted.
Man, John.
Man, apparently when we're hungover, we get these important issues right at, like, parentheses.
We just get them out the way.
Done.
Hey, John, I have a question.
What's up?
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling, better than I was feeling about 2 hours ago.
Cool, that's great.
I woke up today.
Good. You don't have to act it out.
No, good podcast. No, I woke up today at about 8. I was like, oh no, I didn't sleep long enough, and I feel like I have the devil inside of me.
Yeah.
So then I slept for another like 5 hours.
That's a good way to do it.
And then I rolled out of bed, and I still feel kind of gross, but yeah. So it's a good.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to do today other than this. And this.
Well, that's what happens when you have to record on a strange day to fit it in people's weird travel schedules.
Weird travel schedules?
Well, yeah, like last week I had weird travel schedule, and this upcoming week I have a weird travel schedule.
If only I had a weird travel schedule that we had to work around. If only I was special.
I mean, if we both had weird travel schedules, then the podcast might not happen.
Yeah. Let's try to alternate weird travel schedules, or right. I'll just never have them. That's cool, too.
You know, there might come a day where we have to do something weird, like Skype our podcast.
That's insane.
I know.
We'll have to get a guest so there's at least someone with a warm body next to them on the podcast.
Yeah. Wait, so like every episode we'd have a guest?
Yeah. Or not.
That might be unfair to the person who's on Skype, because like they couldn't be able to see all the stuffs.
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe we shouldn't talk this out in front of the audience.
We'll think about it later, audience. Don't you worry your pretty little heads about it.
There will be a future for the podcast, whatever form it may take.
No matter what, there's a future. We will continue to push content at you.
Everything is a future. John!
Yes?
What are we doing?
Oh, what are we doing, Henry?
I don't know, bro.
I think we're just talking. I think we're just bro-broing out.
Yeah, yeah.
Not broing out, bro-broing out.
Bro-broing. What's the difference between broing and bro-broing?
Bro-broing is, it's like broing, except you're doing it in a self-aware manner.
Oh, so we're aware that we're broing out.
Yeah.
We're, like, winking at it.
Yeah. We're not like the bros before us, broing purely in the prime brodial essence of broing.
All right.
We are standing on the boulders of giants, and we are broing appropriately. We see those who have broom before us, and we are broing in a continuum. We understand there is a past to our broing, a present to our broing, and a future to our broing.
John, why does it sound like you're just making this up?
Look, Bro Pilgrim has become unstuck in time.
Oh, that's...
So it bros.
That's a Kurt Vonnegut reference for those of you who didn't get it.
Yeah.
So, that's a Slaughterhouse-5 reference.
So it bros. Anyway.
So it bros.
Sorry about that.
No, that's gold. That's what the listeners want.
Gold cast.
They want bro talk.
I mean, look, the listener emails have poured in and they want us to bro out more.
Oh, I haven't checked that in like a year.
That's unfortunate.
Maybe.
Let's check it while we're on the air. Anyway.
Keep them entertained.
So, I had fun last night.
Oh, what'd you do?
Hung out and drank.
Oh, how interesting.
That's pretty much all I did.
Who was there?
A bunch of our friends.
Oh, that must have been so cool for you.
It was pretty cool for me.
Man, if only I was there.
But you were, though.
Oh, you didn't mention that.
Oh, you're one of our friends.
You're right.
Anyway, other than that, my life has been... Listeners, as you know, I did graduate from college, and I have often maligned that my life is without meaning now, and that continues to be the case. Days blend together. I have a tremendous amount of free time that I had not maybe had in the last, like, 5 years. And I found my Kindle, of all things, when I was cleaning my apartment, which means rest in peace, me. I will be reading the Kindle forever.
Oh, that's cool. I'm glad you found it.
The interesting thing about the Kindle is I like to own books. I like to own a lot of books. But I don't like to own shameful books or books that are, like, huge and serial or a bunch of, like, cheap paperbacks.
Yeah.
Just because books are big objects.
Then they're heavy when they gather.
If they're just something that you, like, read in a day and you don't have a particular affinity for... Having, like, this big object in your house for that, I think, is pretty inefficient. So when I went to my Kindle and I noticed all of these really, really junk foody books...
Twilight?
No, Dresden Files.
Man, Dresden Files is good.
It is good.
Yeah.
But it's very junk foody. It's very, like, blow through the book in a day. It doesn't have huge, heavy ideas. It has, like, a cohesive narrative and a fun story. I'm gonna read a lot of them's.
Good.
I didn't realize I had read 9 of them.
There's, like... Oh, there's a lot.
There's, like, 16 or 17 now?
Yeah.
Something like that.
And he's going to, like, something like 25? 21?
How can you write that much?
Easy.
How?
Create a world and let your characters move around in it.
That's tough.
He does it consistently.
I'm currently struggling with creating a world.
You're right. You're doing that stuff.
I am. World building is hard.
What's the hardest thing about world building?
Getting started.
Oh.
We have mail?
We have mail.
Nice. How much?
Oh my gosh.
Oh?
What? We've got one new message and it just disappeared.
Nice.
What happened? Oh, there it is. Yeah, we've got one new message and it's pretty long.
Okay, looks like we've got a segment for later.
All right, this is interesting. I don't recognize the name.
Yes! Fantastic.
All right.
Yes. Yes, whoever you are, yes.
Oh, God.
Okay.
This is exciting and weird. All right, okay. So I got distracted.
World building.
Yeah, I asked you what the most challenging thing was, and you gave an answer.
Yes. It was getting started.
Oh, that's easy. Just sit down.
I like to... Robert Persig, I like how he writes. And one of the things he says is, like, if you ever have trouble getting started writing, it's not because you have nothing inside you. It's because you have everything inside you and you don't know where to start. If you want to write about a town, it's impossible. So focus on a building. Write about a building. Even that's impossible. Focus on a single brick and you'll write for hours.
Yeah.
Because you're constraining it to a thing where you can only apply certain parts of your perception to it and then create these ideas based off of it.
A lot of the times in my line of work where I help people write, I got a lot of people coming and claiming, oh, I just don't know where to start. Or it's like, I've got all this research now. How do I turn this into a paper?
Mm-hmm.
The introduction's giving me, like, pause. I can't just sit down and start writing. And what I always tell them is, sit down and start writing.
Yep.
Doesn't have to be from the top.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even have to be in a paper format.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe schedule out, like, set a timer for 10 minutes and write everything you can think of, everything that pops in your mind pertaining to the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're done, go back and read it and see if you can, like, pluck things out
mm-hmm.
to, like, use in the actual product.
And maybe that was my hardest thing in undergrad, getting started writing and enjoying it, is the idea that what you write isn't ever the finished product. It goes through revisions. You write stream of consciousness. You're not writing the finished product. If you just write and write and write, you're like, there's usable stuff in there, and you take it out and you recontextualize it, you repurpose it, and then you have, like, a good piece of work.
The thing that I have to say for my job is we have to highlight the fact that writing is a process.
Mm-hmm.
And the writing process, so little of it is the actual act of writing. A large part of it is the rewriting, the revision, just re-seeing the same ideas multiple ways until they get into that configuration that clicks and is smooth like butter.
Mm-hmm.
You want your words to be butter.
Butter words.
Butter words.
Would you like to write deliciously? Definitely one of the things I've encountered is I have gotten started, but there's a tendency, at least with me, when building a world, particularly a highly fictionalized one, where I say, oh, I would like to create this world. So clearly I should start with, like, you know, well, these people believe, if you want to take it back far enough.
Yes.
You'd be like, oh, what did the ancient peoples believe? But if you don't want to do that, you can just be like, what is the mythology? What is the, like, theistic structure of this world? Like, what assumptions did people make that led them to come up with this, like, overhang belief system? And I was like, there's a god and a system of beliefs. I'm like, well, shit. That requires so much more information below that. Like, everything branches out in 1,000 different ways. Like, you know, what led them to create this god? What does this god, like, supposedly believe in? What's the reward system? Is there an afterlife? Is there punishment? Is there a punitive one? There's so much.
Everything ties into everything else, especially if you're starting with belief systems and religions.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that I sort of think about it is you have to describe sort of the world, like, the physical world, the nature around them mm-hmm. that might have inspired the religion, that might have inspired the belief systems, which inspired the culture, and all of that is to say, that's why they tip their hats when they say hello to people, mm-hmm. you know?
Okay.
That small of a gesture is connected all the way back to, well, it rained constantly. And mm-hmm. so it's like tipping your hat also, like, got the rain off of your hat.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a sign of, like, I want to be dry around you. You know, making this up on the fly, but
yeah.
It's everything, because it's with belief systems and religions and stories of, like, mm-hmm. origins and stuff like that, everything's so interconnected that you can kind of develop one,
mm-hmm.
and then that helps you develop further along.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to create a world in a certain scope that's divorced to a degree from what you see reality as, because, like, the thing that I'm making, it's like, I want to say, hey, not everyone knows what every continent in the world is, not everyone's super well explored. So how do you write from that, like, patriarchal point of view? Like, you can just go deep, 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 deep down into, like, this is the color of the grass, this is the layout of the seasons.
Yeah.
But you need to cut back at some point and be like, I need to actually do the things that are narratively important.
Yeah.
Or is everything narratively important?
I mean, it depends on how much information you want your players to have when they start.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they're not going to have the outline of the entire belief system in front of them, because mm-hmm. that's something you want to discover through, like, these small...
Yeah.
Windows of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But world building's insane.
Yeah.
And the way that I find that when I'm doing, like, something that requires a little bit of world building, I find that, like, I get into just, like, one aspect of it, and I end up explaining everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great, so, like, I have that down on paper somewhere, but then I go back and say, all right, well, you know, this page-long explanation of this custom doesn't belong here,
mm-hmm.
but it's good that I have it. But now I can move it to somewhere else and then streamline the narrative aspects
mm-hmm.
so that it still reads like a story and not like an encyclopedia manual.
Yeah. And maybe the thing I'm running into the most is I need to stop myself from being afraid of things branching out and requiring further explication, just, like, actually do work and then put it where it needs to go.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, this is ostensibly for a group of people who will then have their own, like, opinions and questions, and they're going to provide some of the best prompts possible for writing further detail about it.
Yeah. I mean, it also depends on just how far do you expect your players to go. Because one of my first sort of experiences with Dungeons & Dragons, we had like a wizard scholar with us. He was one of the players.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just do a lore check on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the game master had, maybe they played before, but he had stuff prepared.
Mm-hmm.
For every lore check that the guy made. Until, like, eventually it's like, we're in the woods. And he's like, lore check on the woods. And the guy's like, it's just woods. Mm-hmm. These aren't famous woods. They're trees.
Yeah.
Nothing significant has ever happened here.
Nice. Nice.
And the guy kept rolling, like, you know, deep. He kept getting, like, natural 20s on these lore checks. And it's just kind of like, man, I hope there's no battle ahead, because... Yep. Our luck is going to turn. We've got all this information about these goddarn trees.
Mm-hmm. That was something that's really astonishing to me when it comes to people who run these things is if they do their job right, everything seems like it was pre-planned.
Yeah.
Even if, like, a tenth of it was, if you could just sell it and make it thematically consistent, everything sounds right.
And yeah, in a way, it's kind of like winging it, but you're... So good at winging it, it seems like you planned it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's improv.
It is. A lot of it is totally improvised storytelling.
Yeah. We're on a real kick talking about tabletop games.
Yeah, it's just been an interest of mine lately. I know it doesn't enter your wheelhouse that often, and it doesn't enter my wheelhouse that often, but just something I've been thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, I've never even thought of preparing something. That's like, quite an undertaking.
It's hard.
Especially if you're, like, starting from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ostensibly I was like, I'm going to create a setting that's based on almost nothing else.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
Yeah.
But it'll be fine.
I mean, as long as all of my lore checks come out with golden globs of knowledge.
And they will.
Good.
Every time you roll a lore check, I'll be like, there is lore. And that's all I'll say.
Oh.
Everything has a story.
You'll just do that in a spooky voice.
Exactly.
This door has a story.
But
what is it? Roll lore check again. you rolled too low.
Haha.
Wait, it's a natural 20.
Too low.
It's a very storied door.
It's impossibly storied. I feel like that was maybe a little bit... Whatever, I'm assuming a lot of our listeners have played tabletop games.
And if they haven't, they can at least relate to sort of like world building or reading worlds that have been created.
Yeah, exactly. Have you ever written like a fantasy story?
I have tried.
It's hard, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're so far removed from the mindset of, like, I don't know, the medieval period, which is most fantasy sort of seems to be based around.
Yeah.
That it's just like, where do I start inserting my characters? How do I let these characters who I can't really relate to live?
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't really done too much. I'm more of like assuming the world is the same except in for like one sort of difference or a minimal amount of difference.
Yeah.
Because it's just sort of easier.
Mm-hmm. It's for me, writing's always been much easier if it's in like a wholly contemporary setting because it's what I know. It's way easier to just pound out meaningful ideas if you know where these ideas are taking place.
Yeah, they say write what you know, and so, to a point, you don't...
Yeah.
I mean, you could be Grisham.
You could be.
All he does is write lawyer books.
Mm-hmm.
Even as a series about a kid lawyer.
The Pelican Brief.
That's a movie.
That's also a book by him, I think.
It is.
Yeah, I don't know too much about John Grisham, but lawyers are cool.
Yeah. My English teacher in high school was an extra in the movie version of The Pelican Brief.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
According to him, he was just like sitting... his whole scene was just him sitting at a cafe table having a conversation as... Oh, who was it? Was it Sandra Bullock?
Sure.
Maybe. It was some actress who was either Sandra Bullock or the one that looks exactly like her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean Bandra Sulik.
No.
Bandra.
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts.
They look exactly alike.
You know, I worked with someone who looked exactly like Julia Roberts.
Okay, and she also looked like Sandra Bullock.
No!
But
they're
anyway.
Very different.
Whichever one is in that movie could not get it right. She could not walk across the street in the correct manner.
Mm-hmm.
He was out there for a majority of the day for that one take,
mm-hmm.
sitting at that cafe, and this is downtown New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
in summer.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, like, drenched by the time it was over.
Yeah.
And he was just like, just walk across the street. Just all you have to do is just walk.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the only scene he got to be in.
Oh.
It's like they don't want to reuse extras. It was mm-hmm. like, because he's in one scene in the cafe,
yeah.
he shouldn't pop up again somewhere else.
There was Silver Screen Fiend, which I talked about on the podcast before.
Yeah, last episode?
I think so.
Yeah.
There's a protracted sequence where he's talking about being an extra in Down Periscope.
Is that a movie about a submarine?
It is. Kelsey Grammer's in it.
Oh, he looks exactly like Bob Newhart.
You're not terribly wrong. Anyway, so he's talking about being an extra, and he recounts all these stories he's heard about extras in the past, and one of the things he talks about is, what's his name? Like, Stanislav Meisner. The dude who created Meisnering, the Meisner exercise.
Oh, John Meisner?
Sure. I have no idea. Anyway, famous acting coach, and he was... I think it's Meisner. I might be totally wrong.
You could be wrong, but I'm going to at least look up Meisner and see who...
But anyway, he was an extra in this movie, and he just had to look and write.
Yeah.
He was just way in the background, and the director kept told him at some point to just stop what he's doing because he's taking all the attention away from the actors. And he asked him what he's doing. He's like, I'm trying to draw the perfect seven. He was attacking the idea of drawing the perfect seven with, like, such veracity and honesty.
Yeah.
That, like, the director's eyes were always drawn to him in the scene, and he was taking attention away from the actors.
So wait, did they tell him to, like, stop?
They told him to stop trying to draw the perfect seven because, like, the eye was drawn to him all of the time. And I have a friend who does a lot of extra work in Hollywood, and he's like, yeah, you need to be really careful, because you can't do anything that, like, causes a distraction. Like, you can't improvise too much.
Yeah.
Patton also was talking about, like, his character was far in the background, a radio operator, and he had to keep sipping at this mug full of water and pretend it was coffee and man a radio. And at some point he chose to like, improvise. He took a sip and pretended like the coffee was really bad and made, like, a stink face. And the director was like, don't do that.
Aww.
Just don't do that.
Just take a sip.
Yeah.
One of the funniest things I've seen Patton Oswalt do in the background of something,
mm-hmm.
so I'm clarifying that.
Yeah.
It was the show King of the Hill? No. King of Queens.
King of Queens. He's King on of King of Queens. Queens.
Yeah, with Kevin James. Mm-hmm. All right.
Paul Blart. Blart.
That's a movie.
Paul Blart.
You're thinking of a different thing.
Paul Blart.
King of Queens was a TV show.
Okay.
And apparently Patton Oswalt was on it.
Mm-hmm. He was.
And there's this episode where they're celebrating Kevin James's character's birthday or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. It's the start of the episode. It just, you know, pops up with this celebration. They've got, like, family gathered in a room.
Mm-hmm.
And Patton
Oswalt.
And Patton Oswalt is, like, standing behind Kevin James, the focus of the shot,
mm-hmm.
as, like, an extra in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing he does is not move.
At all?
He does not move for the entire length of the scene.
That's crazy.
He does not blink. He does not... You can't see him breathing. He is stone-faced, looking straight ahead, not moving.
That's pretty incredible.
And it lasted, I want to say, between 20 and 30 seconds. Like,
oh,
our character even walks out and walks back in,
mm-hmm.
and he has not moved.
I want to look this up.
You can find it on the YouTube.
Nice. One of the things they were talking about in Silver Screen Fiend is that he had been offered a writing job at Mad TV, I think.
Okay.
And it paid considerably better than the work on Down Periscope. And he was talking to the director of Down Periscope, and he said, listen, I really hate to do this to you, but I have this writing gig. It's going to pay down all of my debt. Like, I need to do it. And I can't stay on the film for another week. And he was like, okay, that's fine. We got your biggest shot. So after they celebrate Kelsey Grammer's, like, victory,
yeah.
I want you to just stand up, clap someone on the back, and walk off of the submarine. And he was like, wait, you want my character to walk off of a submarine that's underwater? And he's like, yeah, it'll confuse the shit out of them.
Walk off of the submarine. Yeah,
he just walks off of the submarine that is ostensibly underwater.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah. Down Periscope's not a bad movie.
It sounds like the director, you know, at least had a sense of humor.
It's not a super funny movie, but it's a kind of funny movie.
Walk off of the submarine.
So,
oh, man.
Not to plan too much.
Yeah.
But you want to do a shortish.
What did you watch?
And then get into this email.
Alright, we can do how about we do a short... Let's just pull back the curtain. Let's be transparent.
All right.
As hell.
Alright. Full transparency.
A short what did you watch leading into a commercial break.
Okay.
And then come back and we'll tackle this email.
Perfect.
Alright.
Oh, what are we doing first? I wasn't listening. What did you watch? What'd you watch?
Oh, what did you watch?
What did you watch?
What did you watch?
What did you watch?
Thanks for asking that. Great question, John. I watched season 2 of Better Call Saul.
Really?
Yes.
How was that?
You know, season 1 of Better Call Saul was really good. Mm-hmm. Kind of a tight narrative. It's like, oh man, we're seeing the stories of, like, a struggling lawyer just trying to get by in the heat of the... What is it? New Mexico?
Yeah.
The New Mexican sun.
Mm-hmm.
Season 2 is like, oh, where are they going?
Oh.
It just seems like a lot is happening, and yet nothing is happening.
Oh, no.
But season 3 might be great.
Maybe.
Because it's like, there's a lot in the air.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what they call balls.
A lot of balls in the air.
Being lofted up in that air.
That's disappointing to hear, actually, that season 2 is kind of meandering.
Well, the thing is, like, with Vince Gilligan... No.
I thought you were just going to shorten to Vince Gilly.
The thing with Vince Gilly is that, ostensibly, he knows the story he wants to tell.
Yeah.
And I'm basing this solely off Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because Breaking Bad told the story that it wanted to tell. There wasn't...
Yeah.
It took a while to get there, but the story was told.
It was a superlatively tight narrative that ended, I feel, exactly where he wanted it to end. So I would say that I would believe that he knows where he's going.
Yeah. So exactly. I'm willing to give him the BOD.
Mm-hmm.
The bod.
The bod.
The benefit of
give
the doubt.
Give Vince Gilly the bod.
And say that, man, while this season not a lot truly happened, season 3 must be good. Because for this season to be not as, I don't know, result-y, consequence-y, he's belaying that or delaying it until season 3 when those said balls start to drop.
Breaking Bad had a tendency to have long episodes where you weren't sure the show was going any particular direction, and then it would end in a really like tight, well done finale. So
yeah.
Maybe it's just a season long version of that.
And I that's what I think it's what's going to happen. Either that or Vince Gilly just lost his spark, which I don't think would happen.
I mean, wasn't Vince Gilly instrumental to creating the strange, short-lived X-Files spin-off series about those nerds in the X-Files?
He was an X-Files writer, so maybe.
I think he was instrumental in the creation of that, and I was terribly afraid that Better Call Saul would essentially become that. But it doesn't seem to have...
No, it seems like just... We're still in the same universe as Breaking Bad. And things are... You know, these are just people who are trying to get by the way that they think they can.
That Bob Odenkirk, skilled dramatic actor.
And I'm gonna say, there was one standout moment that took the season cake.
The entire season cake?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it has a lot to do with the way Bob Odenkirk speaks when he's trying to be, like, a nice fellow. But it has nothing to do with Bob Odenkirk.
Okay.
There's a moment where we... Because the thing about Vince Gilly's storytelling is that we bounce around in time in this instance of this world.
Yeah.
And so there's a moment where we bounce back to Jim... The character's name is actually Jimmy instead of Saul.
Yeah.
Better Call Saul. We back... we bounce back to Jimmy's childhood, mm-hmm. and we get to see his father, who runs a store, we get to see his father talk.
Mm-hmm.
The actor that they got nails the way that Jimmy talks later. Like,
oh, wow.
I'm just like, this guy is basically Bob Odenkirk,
mm-hmm.
except his voice is a little older.
Okay.
It was crazy.
That's really cool.
I loved it.
That's really cool.
It took the season cake.
I mean, it must be a good moment to take a whole season cake.
I mean, it's not even really an important moment to the show. It's just, mm-hmm. it was so well done
mm-hmm.
that it was just like, give that actor...
Mm-hmm.
An Oscar.
A seasoned Emmy cake.
A seasoned Emmy cake.
I mean, who knows?
I mean, the things about Breaking Bad are the best things that happened in Breaking Bad weren't necessarily in service to the story. They were just selling a world in a really believable, great way. And that sounds like it's a really good example of that, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, Jimmy and his father don't have a great relationship.
Probably.
Later,
Their father is just straight up dead, so we don't really know.
Who's the guy with the blankets?
That's his brother.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
man, I need to watch Better Call Saul.
Yeah. No, their parents are both dead by the start of the series.
I need to watch Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
Man.
Oh, man. The series is basically about their relationship.
It's a great relationship.
Who?
Really troubled.
Who?
Yes?
The impressed owl is in the room. Who?
Oh, is that the impressed owl?
The
impressed owl and the season cake have made appearances today.
You know, those time-honored zero credits traditions.
It is going to be a short winter. Anyway, so Better Call Saul, is that a hard wreck?
I would wreck that. Any day.
So it is a recommend.
Omend, is this a wreck?
It's got a owl.
The
owl is impressed. You know what I watched?
What did you watch, John?
A movie called The Nice Guys.
Oh, that's starring Paul Blart Mar Klop.
You're right. Paul Bart Cyclops in The Nice Guys.
That's Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe.
Yeah, that's what we call them.
Both bird-related people.
Yeah. Gosling. Wow!
Did that come up in, like, a Batman v Superman sort of way?
No. But no, it, yeah.
Why did you mention a bird?
It's really interesting how, when that movie ended, me and the person who went to go see it, like, looked at each other, grimaced, and nodded.
That's interesting, because... Weirdly enough, it's getting praised across the board.
It's getting a lot of praise that I think is... I just don't think it's a movie that's easily criticized.
So, like, it's so bland or mediocre that it's coming up aces?
No, it does almost everything that it does tremendously well.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
I will sell you the movie first.
All right, I'm here.
It has some amazing physical comedy. Some of the best physical comedy I've seen in a movie maybe in the last, like, 10 years. Great, great physical comedy. The action sequences, the fighting, the shooting, terrifying, loud, really good, really inventively choreographed stuff. It's really violent and uncaring in a hilarious way. Like, I think the first time gun violence happens in the movie, a woman across the street just gets shot through a window, never mentioned again, because... They sell the fact that, like, it's really messed up when people shoot at each other.
All right.
People get hurt.
That's insane.
Yeah, like, it's really darkly humorous, like, when this woman gets shot. The timing's really funny, in a way.
Okay.
But there's also other people who get hurt for no reason. It's really funny. The movie lives really well in, like, this dark, cynical violence. And then it has, like, a crime, mystery, thriller kind of thing that's pretty good.
Interesting.
It's clearly influenced by, like, a Dashiell Hammett plot, just everything like snake eating its own tail.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
the Ouroboros.
I feel like it's a lot like someone is holding a bag and they're like, do you want to see the best thing ever? And then they open it, and it's a bunch of really great pieces of a thing, but they're not put together at all.
So it's like a really cool puzzle,
Except it's not put together.
But they're from three different sets.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So much of that movie is so good. There's a single physical joke in that movie that, like, I full-on did, like, a barking laugh at. I can't remember the last time I laughed that hard at something in a movie. It's so perfectly executed.
Wow.
It's so funny, but the movie just feels like a non-starter. It has weird, weird, weird things going on that I do not like. Like, there's this 13-year-old girl character.
Oh, no.
Who exists as, like, a moral compass throughout the movie. Like, she exists...
Okay.
But, like, I don't understand why that character exists to bring redemption to these characters when the movie succeeds so well at being really dark and really awful.
It sounds like maybe a studio executive decision.
Yeah, I feel like this child was added later.
Yeah.
There are so many great things that happen, and then she just appears to be a real bummer about it for a minute.
Well, that's not what you want.
I wanted, like, this to be, like, a total...
Eclipse of the heart.
Yes, I want it to be this, like, this hedonistic exercise, because it's so good at being violent and scary and loud and funny, and it just kept, like, shitting on itself.
That's a shame.
It really is, because I really would have loved that movie otherwise. Like, there's a scene in the movie where they're going up in an elevator.
Okay.
This glass elevator. It's so well done. This isn't the part that I did, like, a stupid barking laugh at. But this glass elevator, and they go up, and the doors open, and they look out, and this guy's, like, stumbling down the hallway, and his throat's been slit, and he's slowly dying. And they look over, and some guy just gets, like, shot 7 times in the chest and falls backwards. Then they just, like, go back inside the elevator and let the doors close, and that starts going back down again. And then through the glass of the elevator when they're going down, you see a body fall down the side of the building. It's like, oh it's so good. It's so violent and dumb and bleak.
That sounds interesting to say. I mean, and that's not what I'm getting from all the headlines.
Oh?
Well, the headlines are like, man, what a true comedic return to the buddy cop formula.
No! They're awful people. They're very bad at being buddies.
That sounds like the complete... you name it, the nice guys, and obviously that's a subversion of what they really are.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really wish it came together better. I would recommend it to people.
So is it like maybe a rent and not a watch in theaters?
Yeah, it's a rent. Or if you've seen every other thing that's like super important to you, like, watch that.
I mean, what would be important this summer?
If you've seen The Jungle Book, which I haven't seen.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Or Zootopia.
I haven't seen that either.
So, Shane Black directed The Nice Guys.
Okay.
Also directed Iron Man 3?
I actually like that one.
Really?
Yeah.
I prefer the first one. I thought Iron Man 3 was bad.
Okay, yeah. I mean, the first one is the best Marvel movie they've made.
Okay, so he wrote the screenplay for Last Action Hero.
Oh, that's a name.
Lethal Weapon.
Oh my gosh.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is not great.
He's done all these good gun movies.
He's done good movies, this Shane Black.
I wonder if he's related to Michael Ian Black.
Same person.
Oh, that's interesting, because one's a comedian.
Yeah, same person. But no, oh, it's so... really frustrating movie.
I'm sorry that you were frustrated by it.
I mean, it was a positive experience. I just wish it had been more of a piece.
Gotcha.
God, it is so not like a buddy cop thing. It's in the Lethal Weapon mold of these people are highly... it's a real Lethal Weapon 1 of a movie.
Okay.
It's a real, like, bleak, these people are shitty, shitty people. It's pretty alright from that standpoint. It's very Lethal Weapon-y. But man, really wish it came together better.
Well, I'm sorry it didn't.
Yeah. What a bummer to end this. What have you been watching?
Well, I mean, not necessarily. We got two things to recommend. A Better Call Saul.
And a Nice Guys.
And a Nice Guys.
Soft recommendation on Nice Guys.
Hard recommendation on Better Call Saul.
Sounds like we should take an ad.
You're right. Let's transition smoothly and just take an ad.
Ready?
Wait, I'm not ready. Do you like my joke?
God damn it. Hey, Henry.
Oh, John, I didn't see you there.
By your own admission, you don't dress so well sometimes.
Okay.
Do you want to dress better?
Sure.
Now, you understand that we live down here in the real hot South, right?
That's correct, sir.
If you want to wear a suit, some kind of fancy garment, you're gonna pay. You're gonna pit out a dress shirt.
I'm gonna pay out of what?
Pit out. It's when you sweat in the armpits of a dress shirt.
That's cool.
So don't do that.
You're right.
I have a solution for you.
What is it?
Seersucker.
Seersucker.
Seersucker is a kind of cotton material that's, it's woven together in such a way that it puckers. It's ripply. It stays away from your body, allowing maximum airflow.
Is this a real thing?
Yeah, it's a material. My shorts are made out of it.
Oh.
So it's a super breathable material that they make suits out of. They used to make overalls and hats out of them for workers.
And now they make suits.
Ever since the advent of air conditioning, seersucker has been less and less popular.
But if it's a suit, you need it.
If it's a suit, it's a suit you can wear and look damn fine in the summer months and not have to worry about feeling super hot all the time.
What happens when winter rolls along if it's cold, icy feet?
You wear a different suit.
Oh, I have to buy more than one suit?
Yeah, you buy a summer suit, a fall suit, a spring suit, a winter suit, and a suit for the coming of Scheherazade.
That sounds delicious.
Seersucker, buy it.
Da 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 da.
It's also a lot cheaper than other suit materials, because it's not super popular. It's very popular with southern lawyers. If you ever watched To Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus Finch wears a seersucker suit.
Polyurethane.
Cotton, actually. Da 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 da.
Seersucker.
Okay, let's bullshit.
All
ready?
Right. Bled, bled.
Nope.
I'm sorry.
It's fine.
Man, break was good.
Ad was better.
You're right.
You know what we should do now?
That time-honored segment.
Statements from you for questions to us.
Statements from you for questions with us.
Statements with for questions to us.
Question our statements, but don't state our We got an email from a fan.
Yeah.
And his name is Chase.
Okay.
And should I just read through the letter straight through? All right.
Absolutely. Give him his time, which he deserves.
I guess to set this up, we usually end our episodes with about 20 minutes of us begging for correspondence and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And recently we've been on the theme of, like, corrections. Send us corrections because this is zero credits.
Yeah.
The premise of the show is we don't have experience.
And we want you to correct us because then we grow as people.
And we learn, and then hopefully our other viewers who might not know also learn. So this is like a teachable moment.
Yeah.
So let's get into this letter from Chase.
All right.
He writes.
Oh, do we have a nickname for him?
Run?
Run. Okay.
All right. So Run writes, "Hi. I'm a listener to your podcast. Generally, I enjoy what you guys talk about, and I think you have interesting conversations that bring some value in starting discussions. And your last podcast," this is, dear listeners, John Sari, "in your last podcast, one of you mentioned that elderly people are draining resources from society with their social security benefits. I'm 27 years old, and I have a grandmother that worked for 35 years as a teacher. She paid in consistently to the system through payroll taxes to earn those benefits in her retirement. She receives considerably less from the government than what she paid in. I think it's wrong of you to imply that older people aren't entitled to receive those benefits based on something that our government required they invest in. I realize at least one of you is a recent graduate from grad school, and you mentioned that you are working less hours this summer because they cut your hours at the writing center. I assume at blank. So some of this may be your lack of experience with payroll taxes and how Social Security benefits work. My main point is, I think it does harm to detract from the work that previous generations have done for their income. Good luck with your podcast. Thanks, Chase, a fan."
Nice.
So, first off, great letter.
That's a great letter.
Super well written. Like, yeah. That's awesome. That's the kind of stuff we want. Like,
well-formed sort of, like, counterpoints to the things we say.
It had multiple paragraph breaks.
It did, which made it really easy to read. That's mm-hmm. that's awesome. And, you know, he raises a good point.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty easy to, and I think what we said, or what you said, and I think I probably aha'd with you, is that it's pretty easy to, like, flippantly agree with something that's maybe, can be considered an inflammatory statement.
Yeah, I will be upfront and say, I think it was me who said that old people drain mm-hmm. resources from society.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I'm not gonna backtrack, I did mean that when I said it, but mm-hmm. I was not factoring in that they are paying in mm-hmm. to the system every paycheck, and it's not mm-hmm. by choice.
Yeah, it's government mandated.
Yeah. So Chase or Run...
Mm-hmm. Chase or Run.
Brings up a really good point that we need mm-hmm. to take in consideration, and maybe I should not have been so flippant with my dismissal mm-hmm. of an entire generation of people.
Mm-hmm. It's very easy to make these statements without considering the further implications of what you're saying. I think it's a really good point.
Yeah.
You know, I certainly wouldn't want at the end of my life when I'm drawing these benefits that I've been paying into my entire life, I wouldn't want someone to say that they're unearned.
Yeah. We do have, like, culturally, or maybe this is too general of a statement, but I think there is sort of like an attitude or an atmosphere of, let's disregard the older generations mm-hmm. because they're no longer, like, consumers.
Mm-hmm.
They're no longer producing things. Like, that's that whole mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, we shovel them off to living centers and retirement homes and such, so we don't have to see them.
Mm.
I don't know. But there is that sort of atmosphere, at least in this nation, where it's kind of like, let's forget about the old people. Mm. And that's kind of what makes it easy for me to say something like they're mm-hmm. just draining resources.
Especially as young people, like recent college graduates, it's very easy to sweep them under the rug. Now, I'm not saying old people are blameless. There are things that the baby boomer generation did that we're still feeling the effects of that are really unfortunate. But I'm just saying, in this specific case, that's a super good point.
Yeah.
Did not mean to vilify anyone or make someone seem like a parasite.
And that's really the problem with general statements like that, or generalizations. We're blanket terming people. We're doing the same thing that people do to millennials or
whatever. We did the exact same thing that woman was doing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just the problem with blanket terms in general. There are specifics that need to be considered that, mm-hmm. you know, if not considered, those blanket terms become inflammatory statements that people take offense to, and they have every right to be offended by it, and that's great.
And I mean, maybe moving into the future, we as a society, not to get too state of the human address about it, but maybe we shouldn't call people, like, parasites as a whole. Maybe we shouldn't say that people are draining society as a whole without considering the implications of that.
Yeah, it might be a good rule of thumb to just not call people parasites.
And I'm not saying you called them parasites, but we can't say these people are a drain on society, much like that woman was saying in this video that millennials contribute nothing to society. We can't do that. We can't go to that level if we want to have actual meaningful discourse.
Let's be the bigot. Let's be the bigger blanket termed people
mm-hmm.
and turn our other cheek.
Yes.
I don't know what I'm saying.
I have no idea.
Zero credits.
Let's admit we were wrong.
I was wrong.
We definitely should have thought about that one a little bit more.
Yeah. So thanks to Run.
Thank you, Run/Chase, for that very informative email.
Yeah.
And that's the exact kind of correction we want.
I know, yeah, we don't want people being like, LOL, you said the wrong effect.
Yeah.
You meant affect instead of effect, which, mm-hmm. how did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
We don't want that, but we do want well-thought-out sort of, like, discussion starters, like Chase did just now.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's great.
It is great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much for writing in and engaging us
mm-hmm.
on our email.
Yeah, and we encourage everyone else to do that in the future, of course.
Yeah, you'll get on the show.
Yeah, we'll talk about you a lot.
Well, we'll mention your... We probably won't say your last name. I don't know. We don't want to, like, put anybody on blast.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Put us on blast.
Yeah.
We won't put you on blast.
We're putting ourselves out there. The people who engage us don't necessarily have to.
We are blasting ourselves. Hemingway style. Nope.
With whiskey or with shotguns?
Haha. Good one.
What?
Good one.
Oh. It's magic.
It is magic. Anyway.
So, John.
Yeah.
What are you feeling like?
I'm feeling like shit.
Oh.
But I'm also feeling good. I feel like this has been a real productive kind of podcast.
I feel like I've worked out my hangover by doing this podcast.
I feel like we became better as people. We talked about some pretty kind of important stuff.
Yeah, we talked about some movies, and we corresponded with a correspondence from our fan.
We gave people some nice things to look at with their eyes.
And not their mouths.
You can't look at something with your mouth, Henry.
Oh.
Do you think we have a lot of fans?
I don't know.
I mean, there's no way of knowing unless they get in contact with us.
So, like, yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of ways they could do that.
Oh, really? Oh. Name one.
Twitter.
Explain.
If they go on www.twitter.com and put in the search keyword at ZCPCWHJ, Zero Credits Podcast with Henry John, is what that stands for. You can find us, and you can tweet at us.
It's true.
You can tell us to read comic books that we forgot to read for a week.
I couldn't get to it.
Really?
I didn't try.
We'll work harder next time.
Yeah.
You know, I bet there are other ways people could get in contact with us.
Oh, yeah? Really? Name another.
They could email us, much as Run did.
Good job, Run.
Email us, like Run did, at zerocreditsasapodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Name another one.
You can comment on our iTunes page.
Oh, we've never checked that.
You can comment on our iTunes page, and we might read those. Honestly, those are kind of on the back burner, so sorry if I make you feel disenfranchised.
What if it turns out so many people has been leaving us comments on the iTunes page?
That'll be a huge disappointment to me.
Or a huge segment for next arm.
Capital good content.
And when we check it and there's nothing, the segment will be 20 minutes of silence.
Perfect. So, are there any other ways people can get in contact with us?
Do you want to make, like, an Instagram?
No.
All right, so we're not going to have an Instagram.
You don't want to see pictures of our ugly mugs.
Do we have a... We could have a Facebook page. You want to have a Facebook page?
Ooh, we could have a Facebook page. I'll look into that.
All right.
Probably won't do it, but I'll look into it.
We'll look into it and see. Maybe we'll have a Facebook page.
I'm just being honest.
Oh, well, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of more ways we could have... They could interact with us.
I mean...
A lot of people have Facebook.
You could just send us a letter.
Ooh.
What?
We could make a Google Plus account.
We could make a... No one's doing that.
Yeah.
Let's get on Bing.
Bing?
Bing.
That's a search engine.
Yeah. Search Zero Credits on Bing. Turn Safe Search off and look under videos for Zero Credits.
I don't know. What's gonna pop up?
I have no idea.
Alright, well, those are the ways for now. We might invest in some more later.
Look forward to our forthcoming social media blast.
Oh, what if we had a mailing list? Like a MailChimp.
Like a MailKimp?
Okay.
Oh, you don't know that?
No, I don't know MailKimp.
Listen to the Serial podcast. No! I recommended the podcast!
You broke the cardinal rule of podcasts!
Shit! Okay. We have to end this.
All right. This has been Zero Credits.
Forget I said anything.
I've been Henry.
I'm not here. I'm John.
I did the whole episode by myself, and that's the truth, officer. And don't look behind the couch. Ignore the big 6'4" guy who's crouching behind a small 2-seater love seat draped with a Batman blanket. Ignore him. He's not here. Okay, bye, officer. Be a good sport. Be a good sport. Don't break the law.
Good barm. Yeah, we didn't have anything left in us.
It's a fucking flaming train wreck.